Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we are so lucky to have Dr. Wesley Wang. He is a physical therapist and clinic director of Healthy Baller, which is located in Rockville, Maryland. He is in a cash-based industry and he specializes in ACL rehab. He has himself suffered through two ACL tears, which we talked about on this podcast, but he uses his knowledge from his own experience as well as his clinical knowledge to help many other athletes who have suffered ACL tears. Wesley's social media page is filled with a ton of educational materials, basically surrounding ACL and sports rehab. He is definitely spreading some amazing knowledge about this topic. So we linked all of his info in our show notes, which you can check out. We know you're going to love this episode, and just sit back and enjoy.
All right. Hey, everyone. Today on the podcast, we have Dr. Wesley Wang. He is a physical therapist, and I have followed him for a really long time on Instagram. And frankly, I'm just super stoked to have him on here. So welcome, Wesley. How are you doing today?
Good. I appreciate you guys having me on.
We are so excited to have you.
Yeah. So I guess just to start off, tell us, for the audience members that perhaps don't know about you, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of where you came from, how you came to be where you are.
Sure. I was born and raised in Maryland, never really left until I went to PD school. I went to Maryland for undergrad as well. So kind of grew up in the suburbs of Maryland. I studied economics at Maryland and then went on to go work for one of the biggest consulting firms, which was like my quote unquote dream job at the time. Pretty much about 3 weeks in, I was like, wow, this job kind of sucks. And then at the same time, I actually tore my ACL like 4 months before I started working. And then got insurance, started to, you know, go through the rehab process and everything like that, got surgery. And then I really started to think about my future and think about what I wanted to do for the next 40 years of my life, which is a challenge that one of my friends had asked me when I was an undergrad and, you know, being 20 years old, never really thought about it. And then I went through the PT process and I kind of just really loved the fact that I could go in, get better. And then my PT seemed to really enjoy her job. And then I was going in the morning and I would metro 45 minutes to an hour to my job that I hated. So it was kind of interesting, just a lot of time to think. And then I basically came to the conclusion that I didn't want to do consulting anymore. And then I went back to, community college for 2 years and then did all my prereqs. And then I did 3 years of PT school. So after undergrad, I did another 5 years of school just to finish PT school. and then after that, I did struggle through PT school. It was not a fun time for me. It was just a lot of information in a very short amount of time, which I know you guys understand all too well. And it was just really, really hard for me, especially with no science background outside of the, you know, the community college stuff. And then I went to go work for two different kind of general outpatient facilities owned by orthos. Knew I always really wanted more. And then in the October of 2017, thankfully I was able to link up with Teddy. I had met him earlier that year and kind of just started shadowing him and built a relationship with him. Later on, he told me that he had a spot, took a chance on me. Who knows why? I still don't know why to this point, but 4.5+ years later, now we're up to 6 therapists, 2 locations, and we're expanding our current location, and our 7th therapist is coming on later this year. So it's been a cool journey to be a part of, and I'm glad I can use at least some of my business background currently where I'm at right now in our cash-based facility.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's like my dream, honestly. So it's super cool to see people that are actually doing it. And it's really, I actually did not know that you had like an economics background, which honestly is probably pretty beneficial as a PT since we don't get a ton of business education, period. So you were a patient yourself. And then, so anyone who follows him, if you don't follow him, you definitely should follow him on Instagram. You're like known as like the ACL guy. So how did that like come to be as far as like, I guess, social media wise and just your expertise?
Yeah. So social media, when I started it, It was never, I never in a million years imagined to grow to what it is today. Literally I can, you know, one of my closest friends, I had told him, I was like, I'm going to start a PT Instagram. And his immediate question was like, why? Like he thought it was stupid. And I kind of just did it because I've always been that kid in school to never want to raise my hand. Not because I didn't want to be like, I was basically more afraid of being wrong than having the desire to be right. It was never really a big thing. I just didn't want to be wrong. And every time I raised my hand, my heart would be racing. So I just avoided it. And then I knew that in order for me to grow in this field, I wanted to challenge myself. And that's essentially what I try to do with social media was I was like, I'm just going to post some stuff. If people say whatever or question what I have to say, at least it'll help me grow as a clinician. So that's why I started it. And then it just started to grow a lot. Even when I got to Healthy Baller 4.5 years ago, I didn't have that many followers. I was filming some of my patients at my, you know, general outpatient place, and you know, it wasn't anything too exciting or anything like that. Got to Healthy Baller, had more space, was able to kind of showcase like sports rehab and things like that. And it kind of just exploded. And then about 6 months into working, Teddy and I kind of sat down and he was basically like, you need to do more as far as like marketing and things like that. Kind of gave me a kick in the butt that I needed because I wasn't seeing a lot of patients because cash base just takes a little while to grow. And it was only a year and a half old by that time. And then I just started with an ACO girl there. Her and I got really close, spent a lot of time together, rehabbing 2-3 times a week. And I was like, it makes sense. Like I really enjoyed helping her. And I also really enjoyed learning about it. And I've been through it myself. So I kind of just like, it kind of just clicked into place and then just started really posting a lot of ACL content. And then sure enough, like, I guess I just became the ACL guy. It was never really my intent. And to be honest, there are people out there who are way smarter than I am for the ACL world. I just kind of got to be honest, like lucky that I started it just a little bit earlier. But I still take that with a lot of responsibility, the fact that I want to showcase what good rehab looks like. I want to showcase what evidence-based rehab looks like and help people going through AC rehab understand that like, hey, you shouldn't just be cleared at 6 months because a surgeon tells you, or the PT doesn't know what to do with you, or the insurance cuts you off. I want to offer them basically a platform to see, hey, like AC rehab should be really, really, really freaking hard. You should be tested very, very, very thoroughly. So just understanding that background of it. And, you know, even just before I hopped on, I was talking to, I put a Q&A up earlier today. I haven't answered anything, but one of the, a soccer girl had asked, like, I'm 8.5 months post-op. Can I start contact practices? And even that from perspective, just like, there's impossible for anyone to tell you that just because you're at this timeline, you can do X, Y, and Z, right? You have to earn the right to get to every single phase. You have to earn the right to play soccer, basketball, whatever it is. So that's what I tried to use my platform for. And, you know, thankfully I've been able to grow to whatever, how many followers I have right now. But I just want to continue to use my platform to kind of educate specifically on AC rehab and even more so just like sports rehab, but what it should look like. That's why we had talked about that post from a couple of days ago that we had talked about right before we hopped on.
Yeah.
Do you typically see people right after they have surgery, or is it more of like a subacute thing, if you get what I'm asking? Like, I know that like a lot of cash practices aren't necessarily what people go to right away. It's more so what they go to after, obviously, their insurance has covered all the visits they're going to cover, and then they want to get better from there.
Yeah, it's honestly a pretty mixed, to be honest. I will say my first probably year and a half for so to 2 years was probably just, like you said, that 3-4-5 month post-op people who needed that like extra boost in their care. But now I've been fortunate enough to kind of, I guess, make a name for myself in this area and just word of mouth, you know, a teammate goes down. If a kid's 14 years old, 2 years later, their friend goes down, they're like, oh, I rehab with Wesley. And then they'll start coming more earlier post-op. So we definitely see a lot more immediate post-ops than we did when I first started working. We're thankful to have 3 or 4 surgeons in this area that really value what we do from the ACL rehab and sports rehab side of things. So they've been great referral sources for us. But yeah, so I would say now it's honestly a pretty 50-50 mix between post-ops or further along post-ops and immediate post-ops.
You said something earlier when you were talking about just your story, and you said you're getting on social, or you've been on social media to show like good rehab. Your page like radiates that. It's unbelievable what you're showing. You're showing people that are going through their rehab programs. You're talking about the person and then, you know, where they're at, but then also showing exercises that are just a little bit out of the norm. So can you talk a little bit about what your exercise selection and I mean, it's hard because there's tons of different exercises, but maybe why, you know, there's a normal way to do things, a normal general way, and maybe why switching it up and having exercises that are a little different could be more beneficial.
Yeah, it's funny you asked that. With my exercise selection, like, I think people, for the most part, as far as social media goes, I think people all fail to understand that, like, that's a very small glimpse of the overall encompassing thing. And it's funny because people comment on a certain post or an exercise that I did and whatever it is and say negative things about it. I was like, you are literally seeing like a 15 second clip of, of, you know, weeks and months of rehab and hours of rehab. So that's the I guess the beast of social media. But you know, as far as like the foundational stuff, like I still do the basic stuff. Like I just want to make sure that they do the basic stuff very, very well. And that mostly for the most part starts in the weight room. So squatting, deadlifting, trap bar, step ups, are like Bulgarians, like split squats, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just like you need to do these things with proper form very, very well. And then we can kind of get to the more fun stuff, I guess the quote unquote Instagrammy stuff, like the reactive ball tosses and full speed cutting and that kind of stuff that I think attracts a lot of, I guess, people on social media. But you know, no one really enjoys seeing someone just squat on social media or just deadlift on social media, you know, and it's only going to get you to a certain extent, like so much engagement. But I still post that stuff because it is really important for people to understand, like you need to be loading heavy, you need to be lifting heavy, because if you don't lift heavy, you're never going to regain, every ounce of strength that you need in order to be symmetrical to go to earn the right to play. And a lot of my inspiration for social media, to be honest, is from other people on social media as well. And I think that's a really cool thing about what social media has become. It wasn't really a thing when I was not, PT Instagrams weren't really a thing when I was in school, you know, what we learned was maybe from YouTube and things like that. Maybe something that you could figure out with your classmates, but there was no like spark of imagination and creativity and things like that. And I feel like that's a really, really cool thing, with what social media has become. And Megan, even for you, like I've stolen some of your stuff before and used it with some of my athletes before. And I literally like when you post stuff on your story, you obviously can't like save it. Cause I have a whole, I have a section on my Instagram for ACLs and I just like to look through it. And, my most recent one I screen recorded of you was your, I think you did like a reverse lunge into a high knee with a med ball slam. I think it was like 3 days ago, 3, 4 days, something like that. But it's just like little things like that. And then I just think when I grabbed that from Megan, I was like, okay, that's a really cool exercise. When can I use it? And where can I use it within the spectrum of AC rehab? And that's what I use social media for. And I think some people just like grab at stuff on social media. It's like, I'm going to use this. I'm like, okay, but where and when and why? And I think understanding the why behind every single exercise is super important when you're picking the exercises. But yeah, that's kind of where I get my inspiration from. And I'll say another really, really big part I learned from is our strength coaches at our facility. So we're really unique that we have PT and strength coaches. I have picked their brains so much and I have like just stared at their sessions so much. My first year and a half, I was pretty slow. You know, I was never up to a 35, 40 hour caseload. So when I had downtime, I would just sit there and shadow their sessions, ask questions, ask them to sit down and like mentor me one-on-one and go through exercises with me. And that was a big part of my learning process too. So that's kind of where I get a lot of my creativity with my exercises. And, but yeah, I think that's the beauty of social media and what it's become now.
Yeah, no, I could not agree more. And it's funny because it's like, I will think of things, but it's all from things that we've like observed, you know, like maybe I made it up. I'm not really sure. Or maybe I just like tweaked something else that someone else did. And it's like a game of telephone at some point. But once you understand like the principles, or, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with a particular joint or even just like a movement pattern, and you can sort of like puppeteer whatever you want as far as like with a client or with myself, or with your patients. I actually had someone the other day ask me, he was from another country. So like his English was a little like broken or whatever, but he was like, where did you learn this? Like, what is the book you learned this from? And I was like, I think I made it up. And he was like, so it's completely yours. I'm like, I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world, so probably not. I mean, someone else probably thought of it at some point, but like, it's people just don't understand. Like, you can't just like learn this in a book necessarily. Like you can learn, you know, arthrokinematics and osteokinematics and sort of study like sport and things like that. But really it's just, you know, being creative and then learning from people that are, have probably learned it from someone else, you know, or just modifying other things. So yeah, I love social media for that too. There's so many useless things on there, but there's so many smart people on there too. So you got to just be an optimist, I guess.
Yeah. And I think a lot of students will ask me like, how do you learn about sports rehab and things like that? And to be honest, my advice is usually go find a PT that actually specializes in sports, or go shadow a strength coach. Strength coaches have like extensive knowledge. They're the ones who are training. I mean, they're healthy athletes, but they're the ones training these healthy athletes to be faster, stronger, more explosive. And we need to be able to integrate that into the spectrum of ACR or rehab in general. So I've been so fortunate to learn from amazing strength coaches. And, you know, one of our co-owners worked for the NBA for a couple of years. And another guy he works with some of the best like lacrosse players in the country. So I've been able to pick their brains. Another guy works with really high level basketball players. Like one girl was the second ranked player in the country who work with. So it's like, I have literally free resources right in front of my face that I don't take for granted. And just like, I shadow those sessions. And sometimes I'll literally take my phone out. I'm just kind of like in the corner recording. I'm like, nope, I'm going to use that later. But I learned by like kind of watching, integrating, and then kind of rehashing it over and over and over again. So I can't just sit there. Like you said, I can't just read in a book. I can't just watch it one time. I have to see it over and over and over again, implement it. Then it kind of becomes like a part of my bank and my library of exercises.
Yeah. It's just very interesting because, like Megan was saying before, it's about creativity and like, you really can't learn this stuff in a book. That's the beauty behind it. But yeah, just looking through your Instagram, like the way you explain things and then the way you show things, I think there's a lot of people out there showing different information, but you explain it very well. And I have a background in science. I can understand it, but I think you also are able to give it to people that are themselves struggling with an ACL. Maybe they don't have a background in science. So since you were that person, can you talk about your journey with your ACL and how that maybe helps with your kind of clients today and the people you're working with?
Yeah. So I've been through this journey twice.
You had ACL surgery twice?
Yeah. Yeah. So my first one was the one that led me to PT school. That was, my surgery was in February, 2010. So I just graduated from undergrad the year before, and I was still working at the consulting firm. And then I just went through the rehab process and just like, you know, unwrapping your knee for the first time, seeing all the blood, and then being able to bend your knee for the first time, and then getting rid of the crutch and the brace, and then going through that whole entire process. And I say this a lot, but to this day, I'm still very thankful that I got referred to that facility, because I easily could have been referred to kind of a typical, to be honest, the place that I used to work at, and work with someone who didn't really care about AC rehab or sports rehab, and kind of, to be honest, like killed my buzz for my enjoyment of going to PT, and my life would be totally different at this point. And I think that's another big thing of the influence that we have on this profession, is the fact that like, we can inspire a lot of young kids to want to pursue this. And that's, I do kind of am very conscious of that. And so many of my kids who go through the AC rehab process, you know, I asked them like, you know, what do you want to do when you go to college if they're junior in high school? And like, you know, I've thought about going to PT school. And it's just like, It makes me so happy, the fact that they're taking this major negative of an ACL and making it into a positive.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, especially this most recent one, because it was so much more difficult on the physical side and the mental side, the process took so much longer. And to be honest, I'm still kind of dealing with some pains here and there. Like my right one, I was, you know, a decade younger. I just flew through rehab. I had zero complication, just flew through it. And I got cleared at 7 months, which we now know is ludicrous, without any testing. And then this time around, I had my own background. So I was doing things myself. You know, I was rehabbing myself for the most part, asking my coworkers for help here and there. It was just such a different, very, very, very different journey than the first time around. And this time the mental side was like very much very prevalent, of just being aware of the fact that this is such a very long and daunting task. And you said like how it helps me relate to athletes is the fact that right now I have a couple of kids who are having a harder time because they've had complications, and I'm able to literally tell them like, I have literally been in your shoes. I'm still in your shoes right now, and you have to be patient, and we're just going to keep chugging along, and you will get there to the end goal of playing soccer, basketball again. But it's just going to take a little longer than maybe what you had anticipated. And that's the reason why I don't really tell people that, hey, you'll definitely be back at 9 months. I always say it's 9 months minimum. And then if you get there at nine and a half months, that's amazing. But if it takes 10 and a half months, that's perfectly fine. We just want to rehab the right way the first time. And I tell every person, the highest compliment that I can pay you is that I don't want to see you ever again in my office. I want to see you out there training with our coaches. If you train with our coaches, I want to see you out there healthy playing. And that's the highest compliment I can pay. And thankfully our retail rates are really, really low in the 4.5 years we've been a healthy baller, but
that's awesome.
Thanks. And a lot of it comes down to, I think, a lot of preparation, a lot of testing, a lot of testing. And I will not budge on my numbers. I told a girl one time, she has 88%. I was like, nope, you're not cleared. She was really mad, but she understood. And then to this day, she still sends me people and refers us people, because I think she's thankful, because she's two, three years out now, and she's healthy and she's playing Division I soccer. Yeah. But yeah, that's the standard that we've created now. But yeah, again, just, I think going through it twice has really allowed me to resonate and relate to my patients.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about the beginning, or at the beginning before we started recording, about how important education is, both as like, you know, what your criteria are for return to play, but also just in general as a PT. Like, I'm not a PT yet. I'm pretty close, if all goes well. But I think one of the things I'm most excited about is being able to really communicate to someone like how their body works, and take something that is, you know, fear inducing and make it empowering instead. So can you talk a little bit about your feelings on that, and just sort of how you communicate best with your patients to help empower them?
Yeah, I'm very, very big on patient education. I think it's arguably the number one resource that we can offer from our perspective as a clinician. At the end of the day, we are a healthcare professional. So by definition, we should understand what they're going through, right? And I think, again, especially coming back to ACLs, because I've seen it so many times, I'm able to tell them literally step by step what's to come. I can tell them what's going to happen when you walk into the hospital, what you're going to feel after you get out of the hospital, what it's going to feel like the first time you bend your knee. You know, I'm able to tell all these, and even small things like, you know, a lot of ACL is like when they start flexing their knee for the first time, they're like, my stitches are going to pop off. I'm like, no, it's not. I promise. Like, I see this all the time. And it's so weird, because when I was on the other end of it, my most recent time, I was like, I was doing some knee flexing for the first time. I was like, dang, my stitches are going to pop off. It's just so weird going through it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think the education side is so important. And we had talked earlier about like the exercise selection and us understanding the why. For me, I want my patients to understand the why. You know, this exercise should be for your glute med. This exercise should be for your gastroc, your soleus. And maybe most of the high school kids and college kids I work with don't care about the name. So I was like, this is for your calf. You have two major calf muscles. We got to work on both of them. This is for your hamstrings. We have to work on your hamstrings with flexing your knee, and also at the hip level. It's a two joint muscle, and just, you know, kind of basics, understanding this stuff, because like hypothetically, like, especially now that COVID's still very real, what if I have to miss work for a week, right? They can still do some of the stuff that we went through. I can still send them a program of, hey, you have single leg RDLs, Bulgarian split squats. Oh yeah, I remember that Wesley cued me to do X, Y, and Z. I can do this. And that's why I'm really, really big on making sure a patient understands the why behind every exercise. And that includes strengthening plyometrics and muscle control. Every single exercise should have a purpose and a why. And the patient, in my opinion, should be able to understand it. And I don't care if they're 12 years old, 13 years old, all the way up to 65 years old, they should understand the why. Cause I think them understanding the why, to be honest, like, makes you sound more professional, and also makes them more empowered to be like, oh yeah, like I can do this on a Saturday when I don't have PT. When I want to get in my third leg day of the week to continue my rehab. But yeah, that's kind of my philosophy when it comes to patient education.
Yeah, I mean, I think that education is just key in any aspect of anything, whether it's finance or anything. The person you're working with needs to understand what and why they're doing it, or else you're not really getting full buy-in. If you don't educate, then you're missing that entire aspect of having that person really understand like why, what they're doing. And if they don't understand it, they're not going to do it. In my opinion, yes, it makes you come off as more professional for sure. But for clinicians out there that maybe are not fully explaining because they think that their patient maybe doesn't need to know all of it, or it's too complicated to explain, I think that if you try a different way of actually explaining, it's just break it down. The person in front of you is human just like you and wants to know what's happening. So I don't know. I agree with you very big time on that.
If you can't explain it, then you really don't understand it very well.
That's true too.
How I feel.
That's super true.
And I don't even think it needs to be with like a whole bunch of medical jargon and everything like that. And I think there are clinicians who love throwing out like the fancy words that we learn in PT school, but
yeah,
99% of the people that you work with could care less about it. And so I just tell them, like, this is for your quad. Do you know where your quad is? It's the muscle in the front of your leg. This one is responsible for extending your knee. And that's pretty much as far as I go, as far as like what they care about. They don't care about the origin, insertion, nerve, none of that stuff. They just want to know, what does it do? And how is it going to help me get back to playing sports again? Whatever activity you want to do. And that's how I keep it. And there, every once in a while, you're going to get someone who maybe is in the healthcare. Maybe you get an MD that comes in. It's like, I understand this. Okay, cool. I can explain to you a little more in detail because you understand it and/ you want to know. But again, 99% of the people that we work with could care less. They just want you to have an understanding, be able to explain to them and kind of go from there. But yeah, that's kind of my philosophy. I don't really throw too much medical jargon at them outside of like the words like quads and hamstrings, which are pretty basic things that we know now.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you, or at least that I guess you encounter with patients as far as like how, maybe not even specific to ACL, just, you know, rehab or movement in general that you've heard?
So we work with a very specific demographic. Like I myself see mostly high school and college level athletes, probably that makes up 95%. And then the other 10% for me is active adults. You know, I think a good amount of people will come from other facilities, you know, or they're in the college setting and they've worked with trainers and things like that. And I think for us, we're very big on giving every single patient the, like kind of the attention that they need. Cause we work with every single patient one-on-one for an hour, which is a little bit not common. You know, a lot of times
it's how the healthcare system should be, exactly what you do.
That is correct. No, I wish everyone was like that.
How else could you get quality care?
Yeah.
You can't.
The other thing is I think every single patient, some patients also expect to have someone put their hands on them, you know, because that again is what you see on maybe social media, or that's what you see on TV and things like that. Or that's maybe what you've experienced in the past before. However, we try to create a, you know, empowering education, which we've talked about a couple of times today. Not to say we don't do that kind of stuff, and we're not anti soft tissue or anything like that, but it's just, at least in our opinion, that should never be the driving factor of your treatment. If I'm working with a Division I soccer player or Division I lacrosse player, and they're spending 90% of their time on the table for a knee injury or a hip injury, whatever it is, like, how is that going to prepare them for getting back to their sport? You know? And I think that, you know, you guys just asked like, what's the big difference? And I think that I try to educate them that rehab should match the demands of your sport or your activity. And I don't care if you're 45 years old, want to get back to playing pickleball, right? Whatever it is, or you want to go hiking, skiing, whatever it is, like, okay, if that's what you want to do, then your rehab should match that demand, because these are most people that come in to see us again are active. So your rehab should be active and it shouldn't be passive, which is a lot of these things that, you know, I think gain a lot of, I don't know, traction on social media, like the cupping and the dry needling. Again, we are not against those things. I actually really like dry needling. But I just don't think that those should be the primary treatment methods for anybody. If you need to do it, but that should be tied in conjunction with some sort of like mobility, strengthening, patient education. You tie all those things together and you do some dry needling there, I'm 1,000,000% okay with it. But I just think that the conception that people have about social media, of physical therapy is the fact that you have to do some sort of manual and things like that. But there's a good amount of people out there who don't even need it. But they just feel
totally.
Like they have to have it. And a funny story is I was a new grad. A woman came in, we did the eval, and this is probably a year out. And I was already kind of transitioning away from being big on manual and stuff. And she came into my eval. You know, I did kind of obviously move things around, look at her shoulder and all that kind of stuff. But 45 minutes in, she was like, can I ask a question? I was like, sure. She's like, are you going to give me a massage today? And I was like, no. I was like, that's not really what we do here. And she's like, oh, I thought that I was going to get a massage today. I was like, no, that's not how I practice. And that's not how I treat. And then, I explained why, you know, I wasn't just like, no. and I was just like, you know, I want to help you move. I want to help you get stronger and things like that, so you can get back to doing whatever you want to do. And I never saw this woman ever again. I think she literally was coming in just to try to use her insurance to get a massage. And
yeah, so she should go pay for a massage.
Yeah. But I think that's very common for people to want to go to utilize their insurance and go to PT and say, oh, my shoulder aches, and hoping to get their shoulder rubbed by a professional, you know? And that's a big conception that we try to change, is that like, you're active, let's get you active in PT. If you need some manual to kind of calm things down and help you feel a little better, again, perfectly fine. 10, 15 minutes, but the majority of your session should be trying to help you get back to whatever physical task you're trying to get back to.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing that I think is amazing about PT is that it's like, it's a 50-50 thing. It's like you are educating them, you are guiding them, but they have to do the work. You literally cannot do it for them. And you're not going to get any kind of change without, you know, load, or like, you're not going to prompt adaptation without challenging the body. And I agree. I wish that I could dry needle in Washington. Hopefully, knock on wood, we'll be able to soon, which irrelevant right now anyway, but it's looking like we will be able to, but I think dry needling is really, hopefully within the next year or two. But things like that, you know, you have to do it in conjunction with movement, period. So yeah.
I literally only ever like use dry needling in Texas if I can't figure it out using my other skill sets. And it's very rare because I don't, I mean, it feels great, but I don't like to do it that much. And I'm in New York, so I can't do it here. So it's really like last resort. And I think that's the way that all like hands-on stuff should be, last resort. I mean, sure, can help people feel better, but the treatment is the exercises. It's what you're giving them. It's the neurological effect that you're having on the person via exercises, not via a massage. So that's my little take on it. We all kind of are in the same boat. And I think that there's different types of like therapists, ones that like more passive stuff and ones that rather the person, you know, does more of the work. And I think that, you know, just different people. So,
As an almost physical therapist, what advice do you have for new grads? Because you were one once and I already have imposter syndrome and I haven't even graduated yet. So do you have any advice for new grads?
I think that if you have a specific setting that you want to go into, try to figure out some sort of plan or at least have some sort of steps to get to where you want to go. Whether it's opening up your own place, whether it's joining someplace, whatever it may be. And I think the other big thing is, I think trying to learn from other people, including people outside of physical therapy, can be really, really useful. And I wish I started shadowing strength coaches much earlier in my career. I think that I had a very narrow understanding of the scope of physical therapy. I kind of was just like, I took my first job was my last rotation. And I was like very like tunnel vision on getting that. I was just like, get a job, start paying off loans. That was like the only thought I had. And then the second ortho job was just because I had one of my best friends was working there. It seemed like a better fit, but even then it still wasn't necessarily a forward step. You know, it was like a slightly forward, like 1 millimeter, but mostly lateral step. And even then they had kind of lied. Like the person who was in charge, the manager, was like, oh, what do you like doing? I was like, oh, I like treating athletes. That's kind of the reason why I got into PT. He's like, okay, you can be part of the, like the basically called like a sports team of four of us. And we had a meeting that day and I was like super, super excited. Literally nothing happened in the year that I was there. I still had the usual, like I had two or three athletes on my caseload for out of, you know, 55, 60 patients a week. That's the big thing. I would say, try to figure out where you want to go. I'm not against working in like the quote unquote factory places, traditional models by any means. I do think that I don't regret it because it helped me to see a lot of things and like, in a sense, like think critically, because I only had 20, 30 minutes with every single patient. Mm-hmm. And we saw everything from all post-ops, like even total shoulder replacement, reverse shoulder replacements, total hips, total knees, ACLs, ankle sprains. Like we got to see it all. So I think that's the benefit about being in those facilities, that you do get a chance to kind of touch and feel and work with different things, which are, I think, important to help you grow as a clinician.
Mm-hmm. That's really good to hear. Awesome. Both those, all that is really good to hear. Cause the biggest thing for me is like, I really want mentorship, but I also am just very turned off by the stereotypical model. Although there are obviously benefits to that as well. Just like the volume that you see and then having to think critically and really do the best you can with what you have. But it's hard. It's really hard. Cause like you said, like we have so much to pay off in loans. So that's like, you know, definitely in the back of my mind. But that's really helpful. And I know that there are a lot of student physical therapists listening to this. So appreciate that.
Yeah. Mentorship is definitely huge. I will say that in the the first 3 to 6 months that I was at Healthy Baller compared to the 2 years that I was at my other facilities, I learned more from Teddy than I did collectively at my other two places, because Teddy took the time to sit down with me and was like, what do you want to learn? What do you want to go over? We're going to go over this week. And then next week we're going to go over this. And we still have weekly meetings now with the entire PT staff. And that's how committed we are to consistent learning. And sometimes it's going over an article that we'll pick out. Sometimes it's just like, literally just like throwing stuff out there, like, who's having difficulty with this, like, and then us brainstorming it as a team. And you can't put a price on that kind of stuff, because that's how you learn, that's how you grow, it's how you get challenged. I do think that mentorship, which I should have mentioned, should be the priority. But like we talked about, a lot of places don't offer that. And that's where, you know, there are other means, other ways of getting a mentor also, not specifically just at your facility. Reaching out to someone that you know well, who's in the PT field or whatever it is that you can learn from, mm-hmm. Even if it's like once a month, it's better than nothing. I do think that the mentorship side is extremely important, because that's how I basically became the clinician I am today, is because of the time that Teddy took to kind of invest into me.
Awesome.
Well, it's been really cool chatting with you and hearing like how you are navigating the social media world, because that's really hard. So what's some advice that you'd give to somebody who's trying to wants to just put up their work on social media and eventually hopefully have it thrive like yours?
Yeah, social media now is a different beast than what it was when I joined 4 years ago, you know, with my PT Instagram. Like, it was, mm-hmm. to be honest, significantly easier to grow back then than it was now. Like, there was a period of time I was literally growing at 10,000 followers a month. And I could post anything. It could have been complete garbage and it would just spark fire and it would just grow. Crazy. And the algorithms by now obviously have changed so much. And I tell every person that, and we just hired a student, a former student who now is on staff now, and he was starting one, and I was talking to him, and even from other coworkers who are in the strength conditioning field, I just tell them that, like, at the end of the day, you shouldn't necessarily try to start Instagram now for the purpose of trying to grow to X amount of followers. You should start it for the purpose of promoting your brand, promoting whatever model of physical therapy you like. And that includes like the passive stuff. If you like to do the manual stuff, that's perfectly fine. That's your brand of physical therapy, right? It's no one here to bash that necessarily. And if you're more exercise based, then that's your opportunity to show that. And I think that just trying to grow your brand can help you if you eventually want to grow to become your own, you know, entity of a business. Because like a lot of my athletes, when I tag them on Instagram, they'll go home and show it to their parents, you know, because their parents don't sit there and watch for the whole hour and a half session. And like the parents are like, oh, well, that's really cool. I got to see you jog for the first time when, you know, I couldn't get to see that. Or I got to see you do your PR on a deadlift or whatever it is. You know, it's parents love to see that kind of stuff. And like a lot of parents will follow me too. And they'll make comments when their kids on my social media. Mm-hmm. But it's just a way of representing who I am as a PT and my brand of physical therapy. Like, it should be challenging. It should be hard, but also, like, you know, I like to show that we have fun. We joke around a little bit too, but that's my brand, you know, and some people are a little bit, maybe they don't want to show the fun side and just more serious and diligent. Perfectly fine. That's your brand of physical therapy. So I think just be authentic to yourself. Don't try to mimic anyone. Don't try to be like any of the, if some person has like 700,000-800,000 followers, don't try and copy the stuff they're doing. Just basically do what you feel like is best for yourself and represents what you believe is best practice. Hopefully it's evidence-based. And that's what I would use social media for. And also connecting with other people. I think that's probably a cool thing too. And that's how Megan and I got connected. And that's how I've been connected to like a lot of other clinicians who have also been fortunate enough to refer people to, because if someone reaches out, I'm in Minnesota or Boston, I'm looking for AC rehab, especially Boston. It's like, oh yeah, go see Steph Allen. That's automatic. And I've never met Steph Allen in person before, but yet I still feel like she's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Because I've sent her a bunch of ACLs who are in Boston, because Boston's obviously such a big city. And even some of my athletes who go up there for Tufts, I was like, go see Steph, go see Zach. You know, it's cool, because that's another cool benefit about social media. It's not just about X amount of followers. It's like just offering care, for people out there who want to learn.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. That's a big thing. I think also clinicians that do send their clients to other people, to me, that's like, you want really what's best for your client. You're not in it for the money. You're in it for the care of the people in front of you. I do the same thing. I send people all over, because I don't want to do a virtual session with somebody when they can see somebody in person. and it can be 10 times more beneficial. And of course, with ACLs too, that's really important. I actually just had one in Houston, and I sent her to somebody I know in Houston. So I totally get it. But that's, I think that just shows how caring you are as a clinician, and it like radiates off your page. I said that in the beginning too. So where can people find you if they would like to work with you or would like to reach out to you? Obviously Instagram, we're going to link that, and then website or email.
Yeah. My main thing is definitely my Instagram, just wesleywang.dpt. I do have a YouTube. I don't even know how to like what the link is, but if you just search Wesley Wang DBT, that'd probably be on there. It's relatively new, just trying to slowly grow that a little bit, because you can obviously longer videos. And then I have a mastermind group, which is basically a platform I use to educate students, PTs who want to learn more about ACL rehab, just because I feel like there's still a big giant void when it comes to ACL rehab goes, because you graduate from school, if you've never treated an ACL and you want to work outpatient, they'll give you an ACL because it's on your caseload and you have availability. And yet they give you this outdated protocol and expect you to finish it from start to finish. So I have that out there too. And then my website is just wesleywangdpt.com. But I'd say for the most part, I'm most active on Instagram.
Perfect.
Awesome.
And then we have one more question.
You want to ask?
Megan, you can do the honor.
Okay. So we ask this to every guest. What is something that you do most days? Doesn't necessarily have to be every day, but to move your brain, move your body, or both?
Oh, good question. I am notorious at my work. So I have a newborn. He's 4 months old.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So sleep is comes.
Just wondering about sleep. That. How sleep?
Yeah. Last night he woke me up at 3 a.m. But yeah, so sleep is challenging. But as far as movement goes, I'm literally the king of, everyone knows this, I do like 20, 30 minute workouts max. And just like, I have an hour, I finish my patient, I'll try and get a 20, 30 minute lift in just to say I did something. And sometimes it's better than others. And sometimes it's just like one block of four rounds of exercises and just, it's just something. And even just now I did like a 40 minute workout downstairs. I just try to get something in, even if it's again, 15, 20 minutes. So that's what I try to do. But as far as like the brain portion goes, there are definitely days that are better than others, but I try to stay on top of, research, even if it's something that I look at on social media, and try to follow people on social media that I feel like I bring value in our evidence-based as well. And those are the people that I can learn from, because even ACL people will post more articles than I do. So I've been able to learn a ton of stuff from there as well, but yeah, just trying to do my best to stay sharp in both physically and mentally.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. And, having a 4 month old definitely, I'm sure, challenges you in both brain and body. So, congratulations again. Thank you so much for coming on. This was very enlightening, and I think we'll be uplifting both to patients and also to clinicians that are working with just people in general or with ACL rehab. So thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Yeah. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.